Hello, my name is Daniel Nenni, founder of SemiWiki, the open forum for semiconductor professionals. Welcome to the Semiconductor Insiders podcast series. If you have a topic you'd like us to cover, please post it on semiwiki.com and we'll get right to it. My guest today is Mike O'Brien. Mike was recently the Vice President of Aerospace and Government at Synopsys. He has 40 years of experience in the semiconductor, software, and computer industries. In his 27 years in EDA and IP at Synopsys and Cadence, Mike helped build new lines of business, including outsourced design services, research collaborations, and a government-focused vertical. Currently, Mike is part of a team working for the U.S. Department of Commerce that will play a key role to implement the CHIPS and Science Act's historic investments in the semiconductor industry. Welcome to the podcast, Mike.
Hi, Dan. It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Let's start with how you first came to the semiconductor industry. Do you have a story you can share?
Sure. After a decade of working for the mini computer company Wang Labs, I got married and moved to New Jersey, where my wife was from. I joined a startup software company and found myself working with folks from Bell Labs, especially Lucent Microelectronics, including their Bell Labs Design Automation division, which is their sort of captive EDA group. And that exposure to semiconductors and EDA made me receptive to a call from a friend from Wang who had just joined Cadence. And they recruited me to help scale a design services outsourcing business that they were calling Spectrum Services. And eventually we created a subsidiary called Tality. And that was a blast. We outsourced design resources from Unisys. We built our own design centers. We actually acquired Bell Labs Design Automation and performed design and consulting services for IDMs, ASIC companies, system companies, startups, with our chip and board design services. And, we did every business model from fee for service to risk reward deals to IP licenses to actually taking stock warrants in some startups. But in 2000, the dot-com implosion happened, and that sort of dashed our hopes for spinning Tality off as an IPO. And then Cadence started scaling their services ambitions down a lot. So I was open for a change when Synopsys called. And then I had just a great 20-year run at Synopsys doing one interesting role after another.
Yeah, I remember Tality. That was an exciting time. What brought you to the Department of Commerce, and how did your experiences at Cadence and Synopsys prepare you for this new role?
Dan, EDA gives you a pretty broad perspective of the semiconductor ecosystem. And in my 27 years at Cadence and Synopsys, I work with virtually every major foundry, multiple IDMs, leading fabless companies, major IP companies like ARM. And then the last 7-8 years at Synopsys, I helped create an aerospace and government vertical. And we started working, as a prime to do government research projects with DARPA and IARPA. We had to figure out how to do, government-funded contracts while protecting RIP, how to do OTAs, ITAR, get clearances, et cetera, et cetera. And then in 2022, as VP of Aerospace and Government, I started spending more time in D.C. And when the CHIPS Act was being debated, a few of us started, from Synopsys, started meeting and educating policymakers about the role of EDA and IP enablement, ensuring domestic fabs would actually get filled up with designs. And in the course of that, I met the people that Secretary Raimondo had picked early on to get CHIPS off the ground, even before the bill was passed. And I was just super impressed with them. So I started increasingly getting sold on the mission, the importance of reversing decades of offshoring and concentrating production in just a couple of places, one part of the world. And it seemed like a once in a generation opportunity for our industry. And then during that same time, I'd been doing a lot of Zoom calls from my home office. And I have a shadow box on the wall with my grandfather's medals from World War I, including a Purple Heart. And, a lot of the ex-military folks that I would, be doing these calls with would sort of notice those and ask about them. And, it's kind of sheepishly that they're not mine. I've never done any service like that, really any service, let alone in the trenches in Europe, right? And one of them, around the time I was really starting to engage with the CHIPS team, basically said, look, there's lots of ways to serve and it's never too late. So, kind of one thing led to the other. I just really believed in the mission, believed in the people the secretary had picked. And this was a chance to sort of leverage my experience that I'd gained in the 27 years in EDA, across the whole industry. And I thought I could make a difference. So that's what got me into public service here.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, my family is very big military. My grandfather was in World War One as well, and he was a medic, which not a job I certainly would have wanted back then. And he lived to be 102, so he was one of the longest living World War One veterans. And it's just amazing, you know, how that evolved. So let's talk about the Chips for America team. How is it organized, and how do you personally fit into the team?
Sure. So Dan, the Bipartisan Chips and Science Act, allocated $52 billion in funds. $39 billion of those are for direct funding incentives for chip makers, for manufacturing facilities. And $11 billion or so was given to basically fund research programs and projects. So these two sort of groups, the CHIPS Program Office manages the manufacturing incentives. The CHIPS R&D Office manages the R&D ones, are kind of mutually reinforcing. And I'm in the CHIPS Program Office, right? Focused on the manufacturing incentives. And that group is led by Mike Schmidt, who serves as the director. And then he's got two teams under him, two primary teams under him, that work with applicants. The first is the investment team, which I'm on, and that's led by Chief Investment Officer Todd Fisher. And then the strategy team, which is led by Chief Strategy Officer Morgan Dwyer. So the investment team is really built to ensure that we are striking and structuring good deals that maximize the impact of the CHIPS incentives. I mean, we're oversubscribed, right? So we really have to figure out how to make the $39 billion in manufacturing incentives go as far as we can. So this team comes from backgrounds in the semiconductor industry, consulting, and financial professionals from some of the world's leading banks, private equity firms. So like I said, sort of focus on getting the best deals for the taxpayer that we can. The strategy team includes over 40 policy experts across the semiconductor industry, across workforce, national security, environmental, construction, engineering. And this team leads the development of policies, also leads our international collaboration with allies. This is a team sport. You can't do everything yourself. So there's certainly onshoring we want to do, but also friendshoring. And then this team also sort of makes sure that the projects comply with environmental regulations and workforce development goals. So these two teams really work very closely together, to sort of determine whether projects advance, our economic and national security, objectives sufficiently. And then really the investments team sort of leads in putting together bespoke deals that work for the applicant as well as the taxpayer. So that's the CHIPS Program Office. And then under the CHIPS R&D Office, you've got Laurie LaCascia. She's the director of NIST and Undersecretary of Commerce for Standards and Technology. And under her, like I said, $11 billion in sort of four integrated entities, all of which include some aspect of workforce training. The first sort of anchor piece is the National Semiconductor Technology Center. This is a public-private consortium that is the focal point for semiconductor research, and certainly what we want to be the focal point for the program. And then the National Advanced Packaging Manufacturing Program. And this is really to support leadership in advanced packaging, 2.5D, 3D, heterogeneous integration. We really want to kind of maintain leadership in that particular domain, since there's so much exciting work going on there. And then the Manufacturing USA Institute is sponsoring a digital twin for semiconductor and manufacturing technologies. The CHIPS metrology is sort of the fourth piece, and this is where NIST really will be conducting sort of the measurement science or metrology, right? So how do we actually measure some of these new materials, new packaging, new substrates, new production methods for semiconductors? Each of these teams have their own teams of experts and scientists to accomplish their objectives. So, it's sort of when I joined a year ago, I mean, it was maybe 25 of us, and now it is like 150. So we've sort of built this program from the ground up, and really are trying to pull talent from government, from the private sector, both the semiconductor industry as well as the financial industry.
Wow, interesting. So what's the vision for the program? When do you hope to accomplish the objectives you've set out?
Yes, everybody's asking the question, when are we gonna see some of the fruits of the program, right? Well, COVID made our supply chain risks in many things, including chips, very clear. Cars, white goods, medical devices were all impacted by shortages. And the friends we're in right now with AI, it makes it abundantly clear. Technology leadership relies on semiconductor leadership as well. So CHIPS is really an ambitious program to ensure we solve those supply chain problems and maintain technology leadership. It's been 60 years, right, since the space program, when government, industry, academia worked together to ensure, you know, national security through technology leadership. So this is a big, ambitious program, I think, in, you know, sort of the scale of the space program. In our vision for success paper, which we published along with the first sort of funding opportunity a year ago, you know, we stated four objectives to reach by the end of the decade: to have at least two large-scale leading-edge logic fabs. I mean, today, if you look at the real leading-edge logic fabs, we don't make any of that here today. So we want to have at least two. We want to have multiple high-volume advanced packaging facilities here. We want to have high-volume memory chips being manufactured here on economically competitive terms, and that we've strategically increased the production capacity for current generation or more sort of mature chips and mature technology nodes. And, you know, the Secretary's made some recent, you know, speeches on this, and we're actually tracking or meeting to exceed these objectives. And I think more broadly, she said, you know, a number of times that 10 years from now, plus, you know, we'll be measured on a couple of imperatives. Were we able to build a reliable and resilient semiconductor industry that protects America's technology leadership for the coming decades? And if we've been good stewards of taxpayer money, you know, have we been responsible? And certainly taxpayers deserve transparency and accountability. So those are a couple of things that we're, you know, trying to do in terms of how we're sort of looking to measure ourselves.
Oh, great. Yeah, you know, you mentioned memory. Memory is my biggest concern, because 98% of the memory is made in one central location. And without memory, you know, you won't need logic or you won't need anything else. So it's good to hear you mention memory. So what does the process look like for deciding which companies will receive funding? That's a question everybody wants to know.
Well, the Commerce Department issued our first notice of funding opportunity, right, for manufacturing incentives, like I said, a year ago, and began accepting full applications for leading edge facilities in March, and current and mature and back end, you know, packaging facilities a couple months later in June. And then at the end of June, we actually announced the funding opportunity for supply chain projects. So to date, we've received what we call statements of interest, over 600 statements of interest that kind of span 42 states. We've got 160 pre or full applications, and we've got about 160 small supplier supply chain concept plans under the small supply chain info that we published in the fall. So there's significant amount of interest, you know, Dan, in the program. You know, so less than a year after announcing this, you know, first funding opportunity, we've started to make some announcements. You know, and frankly, the industry's been moving already, right? If you look at the amount of, you know, announced plans, capacity, the amount of construction that's already started, you know, the ITC, which is 25% of your CapEx, that's a real powerful, you know, piece of, you know, policy as well. So there's a lot going on, but you are going to see now kind of a drumbeat of announcements. The first one was a $35 million proposed investment in BAE Systems to replace aging tools, quadruple production of chips necessary for defense programs. The second one was a $162 million proposed investment in Microchip to triple its production of microcontroller units and other sort of specialty semiconductors that are critical to, you know, automotive, commercial, industrial, defense, and aerospace. And this proposal will, you know, create over 700 direct construction and manufacturing jobs. The third and, you know, largest announcement to date was announced you know, recently, and that's GlobalFoundries, with $1.5 billion in direct funding and up to $1.6 billion in loans. That's expected to triple the capacity of current and mature nodes in New York and Vermont. These technologies are fundamental to auto, defense, and communication industries, as you know. And this investment encompasses three facilities: a new high-volume fab in Malta, New York, an expansion to an existing Malta facility, which also includes a strategic long-term supply agreement between GM, General Motors, and GF. So, you know, this should help prevent the kind of supply chain disruptions the auto industry experienced, you know, during COVID. And then, lastly, you know, the Burlington, Vermont, you know, revitalizing that sort of ensures the facility can continue to support critical, you know, defense needs. And we'll also create the first U.S.-based high-volume gallium nitride on silicon for use in EVs and 5G, 6G devices. So and these investments at GF and with support from Commerce is expected to generate about 9,000 construction jobs and 1,500 manufacturing jobs over the next decade. So these three deals have been announced. They're what we call preliminary memorandum of terms. Then a formal period of due diligence follows, and then a final agreement. And then disbursements are made, based on hitting specific construction and production milestones. The other thing to be aware of is the CHIPS R&D side of the house, right? Last month, they announced a couple of funding opportunities. A notice of intent to do a CHIPS Manufacturing USA Institute, at least $200 million for first of its kind digital twin institute to lead the world in virtual fab semiconductor and advanced packaging. They they've held an industry day in February, so there's a lot more information coming out about that program. And then the NAPMP, the National Advanced Packaging Manufacturing Program, has also put a notice of intent out to invest $300 million in funding from projects in substrates and substrate materials that'll be essential to establishing and accelerating domestic capacity for advanced packaging. So, all in all, there are a lot of opportunities for companies to take part in this once-in-a-generation effort.
Great. I would imagine some of the larger commercial organizations know a lot about how to work with the government on the CHIPS Act, the funding projects. What advice do you have for the rest of the companies that may not be as knowledgeable? I mean, how can you and your organization help them?
Mm-hmm. Well, the first thing I would do is I would start visiting and subscribing to CHIPS.gov. There are just a ton of helpful resources there, both specific funding opportunities, there's webinars, there's frequently asked questions. So there's a ton of information there. And then, if you subscribe, you'll get notified as there's different information put up there. We have really tried to make the program be transparent and accessible to many. And the other thing is once an applicant submits a statement of interest, that can kind of kick off a process to engage with the office directly. We've also taken a number of steps to support small businesses. So a lot of these large applicants, these large companies that you sort of referred to, Dan, we're really looking for them to sort of lean in. What are you doing in the community? What are you doing for workforce? What are you doing for childcare? And what are you doing to bring the supply chain there? So, and that's a way really to sort of get in, a lot more, small businesses. So they're actually required to document the broader impacts of the project and how to help small, minority-owned, veteran-owned, women-owned businesses. And we've also got a teaming partner list, at the website, so small businesses can see who, if they may not be eligible themselves to apply or feel it's too big of a lift, maybe they can team with somebody. And that teaming partner list, I think it's something like 700 firms listed on it. And then, as I mentioned, the CHIPS R&D program is going to have a lot of opportunities participate that'll be geared towards, some of those will be geared towards smaller companies as well. And on the NSTC, it's worthwhile to note that the NSTC will be operated by a new independent nonprofit organization, purpose-built nonprofit called the National Center for the Advancement of Semiconductor Technology, NATCAST. And NATCAST recently announced, some of you and I know well, the industry veteran, Deirdre Hanford. She'll serve as the organization's first chief executive officer. Deirdre spent her career advancing the semiconductor ecosystem as a leader at the EDA firm Synopsys. Having closely worked with her, during my 20 years there, I really think this is an inspired choice. Real good ability to understand and align industry, government, and academia. And she's already demonstrated her commitment to the mission with her work, over the last year on the CHIPS Industry Advisory Committee. And more information on that organization can also be found at natcast.org. So I'd encourage people to check that out as well.
Yeah, I do know Deirdre. That's a great pick, that's for sure. So final question, Mike, can you tell us what is in the works over the next 6 months to a year? I mean, what kind of announcements can we expect to see?
Well, in the manufacturing incentives, as I mentioned, we've recently announced three PMTs, preliminary memorandum of terms, the $35 million with BAE, the $162 million with Microchip, and then the Global Foundry projects, $1.5 billion in direct funding and $1.6 billion in loans. So, but I would definitely look, that's just the start. Over the coming weeks and months, we plan to announce preliminary terms with many more companies, and then really have a drumbeat of those preliminary and final agreements. So, I think the next quarter or two are going to be quite busy with those. And then you're going to just see a lot of activity around CHIPS R&D. This NACAST has been stood up. I think you'll see them get programs started pretty quickly. And NAPMP and the Manufacturing Institute have sort of already announced their notice of intent to file programs. And you'll see those actually turn into specific funding opportunities that folks can apply to. So particularly on the R&D side, actually for both sides of the house, there's going to be a lot over the next, over the coming weeks and months. And if you subscribe to chips.gov, you can stay aware of those. And there are a lot of pieces here, right? So that I've sort of mentioned kind of briefly. We'd be happy to have others from CPO to come in and kind of keep you and your listeners updated as we progress this year.
Hey, Mike. Hey, it's nice speaking to you. If there are other members of your team that would like to join us, that would be great. And we definitely would like an update from you, later on in the year.
Yeah, that's great. Really happy to be here, Dan, and thanks for the opportunity to talk to you and your listeners.
That concludes our podcast. Thank you all for listening, and have a great day.